there's a link between the eighth commandment and the ninth commandment with which we are dealing today. We come to one that is very basic in human relations, not bearing false witness. Now, in the original context, this has especially to do with giving testimony in court. And the text in Exodus 21 to 23 makes that very clear. The Ten Commandments, of course, are in Exodus chapter 20, and we had verse 16 read for us, which is the ninth commandment. Exodus 31 calls these the 10 words of the covenant. And these 10 words of the covenant are explained in Exodus 21 to 23. Exodus 20 gives us the principles, and Exodus 21 to 23 gives us the application. So we have many applications, and if you look, for example, at Exodus 22, verses 9 through 12, we have applications about the principle of not giving false witness. For every breach of trust, whether it is for an ox or a donkey or sheep or clothing, or for any lost thing about which one says, "This is it," the case of both parties shall come before the judges. He whom the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. And it goes on to give more of these cases as individuals testify before the judge, and the more of the applications of the different cases. If you look over to Exodus 23, verses 1 to 7 give us more of this idea of testifying in court. You shall not bear a false report. Do not join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. You shall not follow the masses in doing evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice. Nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his dispute. Rather interesting that we think people would commonly be partial to a rich man in a dispute. But it even mentions that you can be partial to a poor man. In other words, in court, the honest Christian is impartial, both to the poor and to the rich. Now, by extension, this commandment extends more beyond just speech in court. It goes to basic honesty in the everyday affairs of life. And the violation of this commandment is, of course, telling lies. And we've all done that, I'm sure. And it would be easy to preach a sermon entitled "The Greatest Liars in the Bible," because there are plenty of them. And you all know the story of where lies began, because it began in the Garden of Eden with the father of lies. And he tells the lie to Eve, "You shall not surely die." And the human race, from that time to this, the great majority of human beings have believed that lie. So we know who the father of lies is. But unfortunately, the father of lies has passed this principle down to his children. We are his children before we meet Christ and before we get a new life and a new heart. So we have many examples. And we might look at one example because he's a very famous example. Genesis chapter 27. Genesis 27 is the story of Jacob. And you may remember that his name originally meant supplanter. And the story of how he supplanted his elder brother Esau is told in Genesis chapter 27. And so he's ready to steal the birthright. He's already stolen the blessing. And so he comes to his father. And Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Get up, please, sit and eat of my game, that you may bless me." So now he's asking for the blessing. But Isaac knows that there's a distinction between the two brothers. And one brother has very hairy arms and the other brother does not. And so in order to continue the subterfuge, Jacob takes goat skins and puts them on his forearms. And so when his father, who is now blind, feels, he says this very famous verse, verse 22. So Jacob came close to his father and felt him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." Some of you may have heard Barry Black preach at camp meeting. I once was at a conference at Oakwood College, and Barry Black preached on the experience of Jacob. And this was a refrain which he used through the sermon. "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And so the climax goes on as the lies in his life continue. And it becomes a story of the biter bitten. Because as you turn to chapter 29, you'll find that he's in the house of Laban, and Laban turns out to be a great liar too. Seems to be a family characteristic. And so, verse 18, "Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, 'I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel.' And Laban said, 'It is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me.'" And you know the subterfuge of how he substituted one daughter for the other, so he had to serve another 7 years. And he went on and he got tricked. And so the liar was lied to. The biter bitten. And so he's getting ready to leave. Verse chapter 31. And he says to Rachel, "You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet for your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, but God did not allow him to hurt me." And he says the same thing to Laban's face in the next chapter in verses 41 and 42. And so it becomes an irony in the experience of Jacob. He who started out on this road to this experience because he was a liar is now lied to and lied to and lied to many times. So the biter bitten. But there are bright stories in the scripture. And we look at a son of Jacob's, and his name is Joseph. And if you would turn over to chapter 37 of Joseph when he's exiled, and the brothers who have sold him into slavery in Egypt lie to their father, of course, by bringing his garment dipped in blood. And so the father is mourning the loss of his son. But now in chapter 39, we have Joseph's experience in Egypt. And he is one who stands on principle. And so Potiphar's wife attempts to seduce him. He refuses. She attempts to seduce him again. He refuses, and when he flees, he leaves the garment. She grasps his garment, and the garment stays with him. So she shouts out. This is Genesis 39:13. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household, said to them, "See, he is brought in a Hebrew to make a sport of us. He came to me to lie with me, and I screamed." And so on and so forth. You know the story. So poor Joseph, because of his honesty and because of his moral purity, he's put in prison for a crime which he did not commit. But God brings out of all that a blessing to the whole family of Jacob and his sons. So here's one of the biggest liars in the Bible, and his name becomes Israel because he wrestled with God. So God can turn even those tables. Now it's nice to see in the world today that there still are honest people. You know the story of Diogenes, the Greek man who went around with a lantern looking for an honest man. There was a charming story in the Washington Post. A man and his fiancée were walking through a parking lot, and they saw something kind of sparkling, shiny. And so they walked over and picked it up. It was a ring. And they could see it looked like it had a diamond. They didn't know whether it was real or false. So they took it to a jeweler, and the jeweler said, "This ring has enough carats to be worth $40,000. Well, what would you do if you had a hot little $40,000 ring in your hand? Well, it had a sign, Mervis Diamond Company. So they took it to Mervis Diamond Company, and they have a registry, and they're able to track down the person to whom the ring belonged, the people who had lost it. And the ring was returned, and of course the people were thrilled that she got her ring back, and they gave him a bonus, or finder's prize, or whatever you want to call it, which they turned over to charity. So you see, there still are honest people in the world today, but unfortunately, more of what we hear, and of course the newspapers love to report bad stories rather than good stories, and my wife and I have followed with somewhat ironic amusement the story of the great scam in Washington, D.C. The great scam, the biggest scandal in the history of the Washington, D.C. government. And it occurred in the Real Estate Tax Bureau. And there was a lady named Harriet Walters, who was a mid-level official. And for the last 20 years, she and 9 of her fellow workers have been skimming progressively larger amounts from the D.C. government. And the way they did it was this. The job of the real estate tax department is not only to collect tax on real estate, but to make real estate refunds when too much was charged. And so they got the idea of giving refunds to people on properties and companies that did not exist. Dummy companies. And so the checks, first of all, they were for a few thousand dollars. And they would make these funds in the name of so-and-so, and then they would transfer the funds from that dummy company to their personal accounts. And this went on from 1989. And so for a period of 20 years, the estimate currently is $50 million were stolen from the D.C. government. And 9 people have been indicted, and several of them have pled guilty. Harriet Walters herself is sitting in jail at the current time. But how did she explain all this money coming in? Well, she said she inherited it from a relative who lived in the Virgin Islands. And so she would take her fellow workers to ritzy department stores in Bethesda, and they would shop, run up $700, $800, $1,000 bills at a crack. And so finally, the problem is, once you get greedy, and once you get dishonest, as we mentioned, have start telling bigger and bigger lies. And so they took a check for $400,000 to be deposited in one of these dummy corporations, and the cashier at the bank said, "This doesn't have the higher level approval that you're supposed to have from your department." So they got to checking. This was last year. And all this has unfolded. So you have the two stories side by side. The scam of the real estate department in Washington, D.C. and the honest couple who returned a $40,000 diamond ring. And so you have these two experiences in life. We might think of Job, who was honest and preserved his integrity in spite of the loss, first of all, of his material possessions. Then he lost his family, and then he loses his health. And as you know, his wife says, "Well, you better give up, curse God and die." But no, Job in all this kept his integrity and did not sin with his lips, the text says. Let's go on through the Old Testament. I want you to look at Psalm 15. Psalm 15 is an interesting psalm. It is sometimes called an entrance liturgy. I'll read the whole psalm because it's a short one. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? There's the question. So there's the question asked, And the question then is, who fits the characteristics of those who are eligible to enter the worship? He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor. You remember the ninth commandment includes especially the neighbor, the person with whom you're most likely to have difficulties. Nor does he take up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. He does not put out his money in interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shaken. Now, I mentioned that this is sometimes called an entrance liturgy. The theory is, those who write commentaries on the Psalms, is this was recited by the priest at the entrance of the court of the temple. And as you came to worship, the priest would ask the question, and you are supposed to recite the psalm. So suppose we have that condition for our service here, and Pastor Joey stood at the door of the church as you came in and said, O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? How would you do in answering your response with these qualifications of honesty with your tongue? Now there's an interesting little phrase in verse 4. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. Now this is a day and age in which professional athletes will sign a contract and 6 months later they're not happy with the contract. They want to scrap the contract, rewrite a whole new contract. In contrast to that, we have Abraham Lincoln, who took this phrase and made a proverb out of it and said, if you've made a bad deal, hug it all the tighter. And some people think he was talking about his wife, Mary. So there's the entrance liturgy. Well, sad to say, if you think about the characteristics of Jacob early in his life, sad to say, those characteristics carried on through the Old Testament. If you look at Micah chapter 7, chapter 6 and 7, here we've come down now, the 8th century B.C., probably 1,000 years later than Jacob, and his offspring, his descendants, are still carrying out his same original characteristics. In fact, things are getting worse. This is chapter 6 of Micah. Verses 10, is there a man in the wicked house along with the treasures of wickedness and a short measure that is cursed? Can I justify wicked scales and a bag of deceptive weights? For the rich men in the city are full of violence. Her residents speak lies and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. So the characteristics of Jacob originally, before he was truly converted, carried on through. As a matter of fact, as you get towards the end of the Old Testament, they get worse and led to the Babylonian captivity. There is a word in Hebrew which is used right here in Micah. And the word is chesed, very famous word. PhD theses have been written on this word. It's very difficult to translate because it has several meanings involved, wrapped up into one. Chesed is commonly translated loving kindness or faithfulness, but it carries two actions or two motives with it. The first is God has love towards us. That's the motive. And because he has love towards us, he is faithful to do that which he has promised for us. Now, how do you wrap all that up in one word? And the answer in Hebrew is the word chesed. And the translators of the Bible have had a difficult time trying to find a word which fit that meaning all in one word. So they translate loving kindness. It's faithfulness in terms of being faithful to the promises which you have made, but it's also loving kindness, because love is the motive back of those actions. And Micah says, unfortunately, in the society of my time, as I speak for God, there's no chesed here. There's no faithfulness. There's no loving kindness. This is a corrupt society which no longer has those characteristics which God wanted it to have. Well, let's go to the New Testament quickly. Sermon on the Mount. Did Jesus minimize the ninth commandment? Well, hardly. You know, Jesus, when he preaches the Sermon on the Mount, he has a formula. He says, "You have heard that it has been said of old, X, but I say unto you, Y." And he takes an old commandment and he doesn't do away with it. He amplifies it. This is chapter 5, verse 33. "You've heard the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven or by the throne of God or by earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of a great king. Nor shall you make an oath on your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black." This is before peroxide, of course. "But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond this is of evil." There was another president of the United States who fit this characteristic. His name was Calvin Coolidge. He was a very taciturn man who spoke the least number of words possible. So they called him Silent Cal. So we have Honest Abe and Silent Cal. And so Silent Calvin Coolidge was returning to the White House one Sunday morning after having been to church. And the newspaper reporters were standing around on the lawn in front of the White House. And so they asked him, "What did the pastor preach about?" And Silent Cal said, "Sin." Well, that wasn't enough for them. So they say, "What did he say about it?" "He was against it." So here's a man that fulfilled the vow as we have it. Well, the tongue, as you know, which leads to honesty or dishonesty, is a mighty weapon or a mighty blessing. And the Gospel of James, I guess I should call it the Epistle of James, deals with that. So we might look at a couple of verses from James. "This know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." That's James 1:19. And joined with it, verse 26. "If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless." So you see, one way to evaluate how genuine your religion is what your tongue does. Now we come to the last book of the Bible, the book we like to preach from so much, about prophecy. Does prophecy have anything to say about liars? Does it have anything to say about people who speak the truth? Yes, it does. Revelation chapter 14. We like this chapter because it's the message of the three angels, which we feel is very prominent as the message of our church today. But I want you to notice the verses which precede the message of the three angels in chapter 14. And John looks and he sees the Lamb standing on the heavenly Mount Zion with 144,000. And these people have his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. And there's a voice from heaven with this wonderful song that they sing, verses 2 and 3. They sing the new song that only the 144,000 can sing. And then what are their characteristics? I want you to notice the last characteristic of the 144,000, verse 5. "And no lie was found in their mouth. They are blameless." Some older translations that you may have says no guile was found in their mouth. The word guile goes back to an original meaning of a fishhook. And the fishhook has bait on it. And of course, the bait is to catch the fish with. And that's the trick of the people who have guile in their mouth. The guile in their mouth, the lie in their mouth, is to catch you. But the people who stand before Jesus when he comes don't have any of that in their mouth. You know, we often speak about people whose word is good as their bond, or who are honest as the whole day long. Wouldn't it be wonderful if when people talk about Seventh-day Adventists, they didn't say, well, those are peanut eaters, or those are people who keep Saturday for Sunday, or wouldn't it be wonderful if they said, those are the most honest people I know. Well, what about the people who aren't honest? They show up at the end of the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 21 begins the description of the New Jerusalem. And it tells who's going to be there and who isn't going to be there. And it tells, first of all, the people who are going to be there. And then it tells you who are not going to be there. And this is Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. And as you know, the repetition deepens impression. So if you will look at Revelation chapter 21, verse 27. And nothing unclean and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So if you want to have your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, be honest. We serve an honest God. He's not a tricky God. He doesn't catch you with subterfuge. He lets you know straightforward what are the elements of the plan of salvation. That you come to Jesus, you give your heart to Jesus, you confess your sins, and he says, I'll forgive you. Ellen White says that's a prayer which is always answered when you ask for forgiveness. God is honest with you. So that raises the question, if God is honest with you and with me, how honest are we with him? Or how honest are we with our neighbors, according to the group addressed in the Ninth Commandment? May God bless us to be honest and pure in all of our dealings. My wife's father was a very, very honest man. He was so honest that he was audited by the Internal Revenue Service 3 times. You'd think those people would learn. 3 times. Now, he was a physician. He taught in the neurology department at Loma Linda University. So he made a good living. And, of course, they're fairly suspicious of people who make fairly good livings. So he was audited 3 times. And every time they audited him, they found out the IRS had to give him back money. Amen. So this is an... Now, my wife has to manage her investments for her taxes. She has a bookkeeper and a CPA in Michigan who does her taxes. And, you know, he has a remarkable ability to, I wouldn't say get around all the provisions of the law, but I would say he carries the provisions of the law to the max. And so I keep telling her, you know, when I'm finally sent to Jackson State Prison, it's going to be because of you and your bookkeeper. But they haven't sent me yet, and we haven't been audited. So I don't know how he does it, but he gets by on the very margins of the law. So even there, you know, I suppose of all places, human beings are most likely to cheat. How honest is your income tax record? Well, I hope you can follow Dr. Olson's example and let every word and every written statement and every testimony in court and everything that you say about your neighbor be truth, honest, and pure. May God bless you to that end.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.